Thank you.
Appreciate it.
To get in order, so it's a nice practice.
Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission's regular meeting of October 11th, 2023. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. For the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Mr. Barry, Commissioner Einhorn.
Here.
Mr. Barish. Commissioner Fuseschi.
Here.
Mr. Goldsby.
Here.
Mr. Hankins.
Here.
Mr. Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, present. All right. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote on any matter, it will be done by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting of September 27th, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the commission's minutes of the regular meeting of September 27th, 2023.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I will conduct the roll of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi.
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. We'll start with docket number FIC 2022-0501, Earl Bradley versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Bradley?
Present.
Would you like to be heard?
Yes.
Is there anyone there from the state of Connecticut?
Yes, Attorney Jen LaFleur for the respondents.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0527, Richard Quint versus Animal Control Officer, Police Department, Town of Thomaston, et al. Mr. Quint, I understand, is not here. Is that correct?
Right.
All right. I'd entertain a motion on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was a complaint withdrew and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll conduct a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi.
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0565, John Kaminsky versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Attorney LaPorte for the respondents. I've been made aware that Mr. Kaminsky did not wish to be heard on this matter, and I would just urge adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As was mentioned, this was a dismissal. The complainant is not participating, and seeing that the respondent has no objection, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi.
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan. Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0046, Sergio Correa versus James Ravella, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, Division of State Police, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Does anyone wish to be heard? This was a withdrawal. I didn't entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, as you mentioned, the complainant withdrew this. It was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi.
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby.
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan. Passes unanimously. Yes, passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0325, Gregory Mantell in Investigative News Service versus Risk Manager, Town of Fairfield and Town of Fairfield. Is there anyone here on that matter? That was dismissed for a failure to prosecute. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter. Yep, complaint failed to appear. It was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0504, Natasha Grayson versus Chief Police Department, Town of Greenwich et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Abby Wather, Assistant Town Attorney for the Town of Greenwich, for the respondents.
Do you wish to be heard?
Requesting adoption of the dismissal of this matter.
Yes, and you're Abby Waters?
Wather, W-A-D-L-E-R.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Attorney Wather. Is there anyone else here on this matter? Is Natasha Grayson here? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The complainant has failed to appear. It was dismissed, and the complainant is further is admonished for failing to appear, resulting in a waste of scarce state and municipal resources. And with no objection to the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing support.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0532, John Schoenhorn versus Chief Police Department, Town of Plainville et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Attorney Schoenhorn? I'd entertain a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this was a dismissal. Move adoption of the hearing support.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll call a roll of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0598, John Schoenhorn versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection et al. Again, is anyone here on that matter? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0539, David Lober. Versus First Selectman, Town of Woodbridge et al. Is anyone here on that matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, seeing no one present, it was a dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll call a roll of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, passes unanimously. Last is docket number FIC 2022-0557, John Kennedy versus Superintendent of Schools, Madison Public Schools et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Hello, John Kennedy.
Would you like to be heard?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy? Okay, we'll mark that ready.
Attorney Kelsey Scarlett?
Yes. Thank you, Attorney Scarlett. Okay, we'll mark that ready. All right. Before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. Just to let everyone know, these proceedings are being recorded in their entirety, so there's no need to request a recording. We will place that recording on our website soon after the meeting, and if you have any trouble accessing that, just let us know. And then pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side. I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you. All right, we're calling the first matter, docket number FIC 2022-0501, Earl Bradley versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction et al. Attorney Lepore. Mr. Bradley, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. And could you please identify yourself?
I'll just advise that Deputy Lepore.
You're speaking too fast for me, I'm sorry.
I'll just
center hazard.
Stephanie Secor, yeah. Counselor Supervisor?
Yeah, Y Administrator for the Department.
Thank you, Counselor Seagull. Attorney Lepore.
Do you want me to re-identify myself?
Yes, please.
Yes, Attorney Jennifer Lepore, L-E-P-O-R-E, representing the respondents in this matter.
Okay, and we have Earl Bradley on the phone. Mr. Bradley, would you like to begin, please?
Okay. The hearing integrity is compromised where the hearing officer assumes that all testimony endorsed by counsel is true. An assumption, presumption that it's all true with complete tolerance of perjury. I've had another experience where overt perjury was committed during the hearing, and then this recent one, and I sent an October 2nd letter, which I sent the required 15 copies, that in paragraph 3, apparently the hearing officer used that testimony in forming her decision, and I defy the defense of any provision of what was provided in testimony under 3, where standard protocol would be that I would send a freedom of information request for material that's at Corrigan through Cheshire first, and I diligently searched through all administrative directives and the Cheshire handbook, and there's none. And finally, I just protest that I believe that the commissioners should demand honesty at the hearing. And with me making an allegation of something verifiable that they don't take the time to verify what I'm saying as true. And then lastly, the final sentences under 12 say that if records exist, they will be provided, which they weren't. And the fact is, certain documents absolutely should exist in the administrative directive. They should exist, and the response of the respondent is simply, no, we don't have it. And that's completely fine with the Freedom of Information Commission. Again, dishonesty encouraged. It's business of the day, I suppose. And that's all. I just wanted to make that protest, knowing full well that I will be losing this. I can't get blood out of a stone or documents out of a place that refuses to give them. But I do protest that perjury is accepted.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Attorney Lepore.
I would like to state unequivocally off the top that the testimony provided in this matter was truthful and thorough. And I believe that the hearing officer's report factually encapsulates everything that was said. Second of all, Mr. Bradley was provided with records pursuant to paragraph 12. At the hearing, Counselor Supervisor Secord indicated that we would perform an email extract. We needed some additional areas of information, and email extracts take a little bit of time. He was provided with 9 pages of redacted emails on October 4th. And that is what we agreed to during the hearing in this matter. The additional documents that he had requested, we needed more information, which was not provided in order to retrieve those documents. So when the hearing officer says, and I think this is in paragraph 11 perhaps, it's still in paragraph 12. To the extent that they were able to do so, that refers to the email extract. We need certain information in order to search for the records. Without that information, we're unable to query the database where those records exist. So I would say that we did not violate the Freedom of Information Act and went above and beyond in providing records to Mr. Bradley after the hearing in this matter.
It sounds like you're going to be providing additional records to him as well.
No, that is the extent of the records.
9 pages that you
provided. 9 pages, yep.
Okay, so there's no additional records?
No.
Thank you. Sir, did you wish to respond?
I did get redacted records where the entire pages were all blackened out with no substance at all in any of them. But that's besides the point. The point is that there are certain records that should have existed simply like an order to have me discharged for different things that by standards there are incident reports, and none of them are, I didn't repeat what I had requested. And again, the October 6th request, which was denied, ever received, had all the documents that I wanted clearly listed, which was still a part of record after the fact, after the hearing. And referring to October 6th request, I'm sure item by item, the Attorney General's office cannot back up what they're saying today with regard to itemize one by one things that should have existed, but they just claim they don't have. And moreover, and again, paragraph 3 references a standard protocol where I would have to request through my home location, Cheshire, items that are at Corrigan as policy. That's the protocol. But in fact, I had multiple times requested items from a different location. Never was there any protest or any hint that I should involve Cheshire when the items are not at Cheshire. And again, with the Freedom of Information rules where you have only a month to file a complaint, there's no time for wasted sending it to Cheshire a week later. There's no time for that back and forth play unless it's by design to sort whoever's trying to complain. There's no rationale whatsoever why my request to Corrigan should have gone to Cheshire, as it says in the third paragraph, and I claim there's nowhere in the administrative directive that can be cited for the commission. And I would hope that the commission's hearing me say one thing and the attorney saying another. I just hope that there's a fact check to see which one of us is telling the truth. There is no administrative directive where it says protocol is send it to Cheshire if it's information to Corrigan. And I doubt that point blank when you take one issue like that it's going to be responded to today. We'll probably hear in response to me another device where we're taken in a circle where no one cares if there's perjury committed or not.
One question, I think.
Well, that's it.
Sure. I was going to let Attorney Lepore respond.
Sure, absolutely.
Do you want to respond?
Sure. Mr. Bradley is correct. We do not have a Freedom of Information Administrative Directive. But regardless, the point that the hearing officer was making is that we did not receive in any way, shape, or form the request that he had submitted. Regardless of where he submitted it, we did not receive it until a couple days before we got, or actually at the same time that we got the complaint in this matter. So it was a jurisdictional issue that the dismissal rested on. And I would also just like to note that Mr. Bradley did receive, prior to the hearing, other documents responsive to his request. He received a copy of AD 6.9, which I believe if you look on page 2, that is paragraph H. He had also received a copy of our use of force directive, which was referenced in F and G and E. He also received a copy of a couple of incident reports, and we've provided all the documents that could possibly be related to the request in this matter. I understand that Mr. Bradley may think that additional documents should have been created, potentially another incident report or something like that. But the fact of the matter is they just simply weren't. And we've conducted an exhaustive search for these types of records.
He said one thing that was inconsistent with what you said. He said he received redacted reports.
That was after the hearing. I'm sorry, the documents that I just mentioned were provided before the hearing. I'd mentioned those because the hearing officer had mentioned them in paragraph 12 of her report.
But you had said you had provided 9 pages of documents to him on October 4th, 2023.
Which was after the hearing, yes.
Were those redacted?
Yes, they were emails.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Attorney for possession.
Attorney LaCour, I have a question, and maybe hearing officer Smith gave my response to. So I take your all the points you've made in this specific case here, but I am interested by the comments of Mr. Bradley. How is a what is the procedure if I'm in prison one, but I'm trying to seek documents from that are somehow linked to prison two? How would the prisoners know what that procedure is? Is there some communication, some piece of paper, something that informs them that might have been what hearing officer Smith, when we get to standard protocol, remember, as a concept, if there is such a concept. But secondly, how are prisoners educated on this issue, and is it in some written form somewhere?
I'm happy to have Counselor Supervisor Secor basically
repeat the testimony. People to answer the question, but I don't know the answer. Thank you.
If that's okay with you.
Oh, absolutely.
So at each facility, there is usually a list. It's sometimes it's labeled, like it's administrative remedies. So that list would have certain job duties and or the staff that's associated with it and who they can write to. So per se, Carl Robinson off the top of him, because I was a liaison there, there is a list that's shown. It would say FY liaison. It would have my name up there, and that's who you write to. Regardless of what facility you are located at as an inmate, you write to the liaison at that facility for your requests to get you records. Just like the public per se, if you were to write a request to me at central office for a record that is located at Cheshire, I'm going to contact Cheshire's FY liaison and I'm going to get those records, or the person there that has the custody of them, so I can go through them and provide them to you. The same thing happens for inmates in the facilities. He is at Cheshire, writes to me at Cheshire, I write to Corrigan, and I get the records that I need from Corrigan. They'll do their search. The liaisons communicate within each other as well as utilizing me for assistance to be able to get records to inmates when they're located at other facilities. So, I mean, they also write to, like, email extractions, for example. He put in one of those. Those come to my office for me to put a ticket in for our IT department to complete those. So everyone has a function, and I complete the function, and that information gets back to me and or the liaison that goes to the inmate.
So for a prisoner to get anything out that relates to FOI, it has to go through the FOI person at the prison.
Unless they're making a request.
Is there anything in writing that they can read about how the procedure works?
Well, I mean, realistically, when they go into their inmate handbook and it talks about inmate requests, the inmate request system, it's in there about who you should. You make that request to the person you need to get your records. So if you have a question about your sentence and your time calculation, you're going to write to the records department at your facility. If you write to the records department at county, that where you were at previously, they won't have your master file. They can't do that for you. So you have to write to your facility to get assistance. Can they send inter-office mail out to other facilities? Yeah, but it's not answered as quickly. It's not taken care of as quickly. It's faster when they go through the facility that they're at and they ask staff and or write requests to staff for assistance. Staff is there to have that assistance there. Most of those facilities have lists. So, and even some of the lists that tell you what the job duties are and who they should write to, say you have a grievance and you want to write a grievance, that person's name will be on that list. Some of those lists are also on their tablets that they can go into and they can look this information up all on their own.
Thank you very much. But there is some timing pressure. That's why I'm trying to. So, what do I hear between? What you're saying by using the system?
By using it properly and writing the staff at the facility, it gets addressed right away versus now when they send it out to me at central office, it's going to get sent through the mail system in our office, get to my office. It's getting there days later.
So, go from you back to the prison?
Yeah, so I would read that, I formulate my response, and then I'm sending it back. So that takes time for them to get stuff when they start sending it out to other facilities and or central office. When they write directly to the liaison at the facility, every facility has one, and it is noted for them to know and or find out. And they have no problem writing requests to anybody to ask any question at any given time. So they can, if they simply just put FY liaison on the top of that request, it's getting to that facility's FY liaison. It's not going to go to anybody else. But when they put someone else's name on it, accidentally, grievance per se, or administrative remedies coordinator, it's going to go to that person, delaying that process, delaying us from being able to get the request to complete it.
Thank you. I understand the process. Thank you. Maybe you don't, you're sort of relying on what you said.
I mean, I can explain. The testimony was that, Mary Kate Smith, I was designated as the hearing officer in this case.
Thank you.
The testimony was that the standard operating procedure was to have, he was housed at Cheshire, he was requesting records from Corrigan. He should have still given it to the FOI liaison at Cheshire. And the point, the reason why I included that was more for background information. It's not necessarily to fault the complainant, however, to explain why this FOI request, there is no record. I mean, at the end of the day, there's no evidence that the respondents received these requests prior to the complaint being filed. And so that kind of gives you background, whereas if he had handed it over directly to the FOI liaison at the facility, that person would likely be able to give him a receipt more quickly. So this is more background information about what happened, not to fault the complainant necessarily. And the testimony was that it was standard operating procedure, I think is the words that was used at the hearing.
Thank you.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions? All right. Mr. Bradley, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just to reiterate that my one copy that was redacted had zero substance. The entire content was redacted, and I would hope that a sample would be shown to the commissioners. And the other is, it was impossible to follow the rationale that was just given by the question that was asked, and now the importance of it's being diminished. But the fact is, under oath, it was said that I was supposed to have sent the request to Cheshire, not to Corrigan, when in fact I have multiple documents of request that were answered by Corrigan without any protest. Moreover, Corrigan wrote directly to me. That flies against Cheshire being involved. Why didn't at least Corrigan involve Cheshire if it's for any reason reasonable? And again, there's no expedience in having Cheshire as the middleman. Again, documents take like a week each way sometimes for a prisoner, and we have only a 30-day window when the ability to complain to FOI Commission is no longer available. So when you put in an inmate request, by design, you already have to wait 15 business days before they answer. That takes away 15 days of the month. And then if you were to send it to Cheshire and then to Corrigan, it's again, not expedient, and it's just reality that they've never demanded that before, and yet they were trying to find fault with me in the hearing. And again, you would have to have someone that cared enough to just look at the document, aside from that they don't have them, the fact that they should exist, and they just do that with impunity, and they obstruct the process. And again, I realize I'm going to lose today, but I'm hoping I can at least raise to the conscience the committee members to not accept perjury without question. And again, just a specific look at documents that I requested, and a specific question: should these documents exist, and if not, why not?
Thank you.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may, I would just direct the commission's attention. There were three affidavits that were provided by the respondents in this hearing regarding who saw the initial request when, and there is one also from Corrigan, the FOI liaison at Corrigan, which states that they had not seen the request before the complaint came in.
Thank you, Attorney Report.
All right. Commissioners have any questions? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Schreeder, I move adoption of the hearing officer report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
This is Commissioner Hankins. I mean, it's the duty of the hearing officer to weigh the evidence and determine the facts to be found. And I'm not going to substitute my judgment for that of the hearing officer in this matter. Not even a remote chance of it. It's an experienced hearing officer. She knows what she's doing. She knows how to weigh the evidence. So I'm not going to overturn it.
Thank you. All right. I'll take a roll call on those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you all. Thank you, Mr. Bradley.
Thank you.
All right. So we'll move on to the last matter, which is document number FIC 2022-0557, John Kennedy versus Superintendent of Schools, Madison Public Schools, et al. You sit over here. Please identify yourselves for the record, starting with you, sir.
Yeah, I'm John Kennedy.
Thank you.
I'm Kelsey Scarlett, attorney for the respondents.
Thank you.
Mr. Kennedy, would you like to begin?
Sure. Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. However, I'm very disappointed with the proposed decision of Attorney Munn. It is my belief that the data does exist, and in fact, in the hearing, Patrick Cook acknowledged that the data exists. It just does not exist in a report format. I've spent more than 20 years working in data and analytics, and while a specific report may not exist, the data does. And this is what I'm asking for. It's sort of like a police report. The report does not exist until the police officer writes it. Not writing a report would not be acceptable to anyone in that situation. So why is that acceptable here at the FOIA Commission? For more than a year, my family has been working diligently and feverishly to try to get our son and the rest of the kids on his bus to school each morning in a timely manner. We've been met with nothing but obstacles and roadblocks at every turn. We have sent over 100 emails. Some were answered and some were ignored. We've made numerous phone calls to various agencies, including your office, the State Department of Education, attorneys, state representatives, and obviously our own district. Again, some calls were answered and most were ignored. We have pleaded with the Madison Board of Ed to do what they were elected to do and demand some accountability from Dr. Cook. We even caught Dr. Cook in a flat-out lie. In an email with the Board of Education copy, Dr. Cook stated that he was going to call the police because I was following the bus and made it unsafe. And the bus had to pull over to wait for me to go by, and it's on video. I replied asking him to show the video to everyone on the email, and he did not. In fact, when I confronted him about it in person, he said that's what he heard. So I ask you, wouldn't you make 100% certain that it happened before accusing someone of such a serious event?
I would, and I'm sure all of you would as well.
We also attended a district transportation hearing, which we thought was going to be more of an open conversation, but felt more like an interrogation by Attorney Mooney. And finally, we came to this commission at the recommendation of Attorney Louis Tedisco with the Connecticut Department of Education, who stated the following. The arrival time of the school bus no doubt causes distress to your son and other students who arrive on the same bus. It would be better if the students had time to get ready for class without this distress. It was our hope that the commission would see the case the way we do. The data exists and should be provided to us. In the initial hearing, you will note the following. The acknowledgement that the data exists, just not exists in report format. As I mentioned previously, I have worked in data analytics and reporting for over 20 years. No report exists until they are created. The data exists, a report can be created. You just have to want to do it. My sense is that the district does not want this report to exist because they know it will cast a shadow on the decision-making and transportation system. So if they don't want to make the report, then let them. Give the authorization to Durham Bus Company to share the data and I can do the work for them. Throughout the initial hearing, the recording shows Dr. Cook stumble through his words describing the process of creating a report and our transportation hearing with the district. He and the director of transportation of the district scolded a representative of the Durham Bus Company for referencing Joshua and Michelle, assuming that she was speaking about students on the bus. No. She was referencing streets on the route. It's my belief that Dr. Cook doesn't have a clear understanding of anything related to the district's transportation, whether it's the route themselves or how to monitor them. In summary, I say this. The district acknowledges that the GPS data for the bus does in fact exist. We have asked for it a handful of occasions that's been given to us. I suppose if we wanted to, we could have called the district every single day for 180 days last year to request this information. I wonder what the district would have done if we chose that route. If the commission does not compel the district to provide a comprehensive report to my family as we've asked, it's essentially admitting that a respondent can defend itself by saying that putting together a report would be too flawed. Is that really the stance the commission wants to take on this? Again, our belief is that the district is intentionally being difficult in this situation. We know that this data will cast a negative shadow. Can you imagine that community members would think if they knew that the first day of statewide testing, a bus full of fourth and fifth graders was late to school, particularly after numerous emails from the district were sent to families stressing the importance of being on time that day? The optics of that aren't great, are they? Neither the optics of this, if the commission does not compel the district to provide this data to us because they say it's hard. Thank you. And just one side note, Ms. Murphy, you should tell Tom Hennick that he should hang up the phone properly before engaging in an unprofessional conversation with a colleague. And you should have the decency to call someone back after leaving four voicemails as unprofessional behavior. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Sure.
Just identify yourself again.
Kelsey Scarlett, attorney for the respondents. At issue is a complainant's request from November 17th, 2022, email requesting the respondents provide him with a copy of a report that shows a date, day, week, and arrival time to Brown Intermediate School for bus 16. To be very clear, the respondents do not maintain this information requested by the complainant, and thus it has no records responsive to the request. Moreover, as a public agency, the respondents are not required to prepare reports at the complainant's direction. The Durham School Services provides school bus services for the respondents, and the Durham's buses are equipped with GPS technology. At the hearing, the respondents testified, and hearing officer Mona found that the respondents do not maintain the report requested by the complainant, neither does Durham. The GPS data for each day is maintained by Durham in a separate data file. The report requested by the complainant could not be created through an automated process. Okay. To provide the report, I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
That's fine.
To provide the report, the complainant requests the respondents would have to obtain the GPS data for each day of the school year from Durham and then manually input the data in a spreadsheet. At the hearing, the complainant even acknowledged that to comply with this request, the respondents would have to create a report that does not exist. Although FOIA gives every person the right to request and access records that exist, it is well established that FOIA does not require public agencies to create records that do not exist. Based on the testimony of both the respondent and the complainant at the hearing, the report the complainant requests simply does not exist. We ask that you adopt hearing officer Munn's decision, and we have no objections to that.
Thank you. Attorney Munn.
Good
care to comment, please?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. This is for the record, Kevin Mondo is the hearing officer in this matter. Were there any specific questions, or did you?
No, I just want to know if you want to comment on the arguments that were made.
I think the respondent's attorney summed it up pretty well. The request was for, it's in the second paragraph of the report, it was, the request was specifically for a report that shows the bus arrival times for each day of the school year. During the hearing, the complainant acknowledged that his request was for the respondents to create a report that doesn't exist. Just to confirm, I had accurately understood how the system worked. I asked the respondent's witness how he goes about getting that information, and the testimony was that if the school district has a need for a bus arrival time or departure time for a specific day, the school district can call the bus company and get that information for a specific day for a specific bus, but it's not something that they receive as a matter of course. It's not something where the bus company can has this report already created. It's something that there's a separate data file for each bus for each day. And so to create this report, it would require the respondents to get, so imagine if there are 100, 100 days of data that they wanted, the district would have to get 100 separate data files, look through each data file, and take the information from each file and put it manually into a spreadsheet. That's what the request was for, and that there are, it's well established that agencies are not required to create reports or create records that don't exist. And so that was the basis for the decision.
You say it's well established, and in fact, you cited Albright in your brief. You don't happen to have Albright with you, do you?
I don't have a copy of it. Mm-hmm. No.
But in that case, can you summarize what the Superior Court said, not the Commission? This is the court, correct?
That was a Superior Court decision. I don't recall at this point what the facts of that case were. Those are two of the many cases where similar issues have arisen, and those were two that I cited, but there are probably dozens of others.
The Superior Court has rendered.
And the Superior Court has affirmed the Commission's conclusion that agencies are not required to create records that don't exist.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any commissioners have any questions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Hankins, I'm probably going down a rabbit hole here, okay? I'm going to display probably my ignorance, but Mr. Kennedy, you say that you admit that the data exists. Everyone admits that the data exists,
sure. Correct?
Okay. And that the defendants are not obligated by law. I think it's clear that they're not obligated to create a document. And I note in paragraph 8 that says that the respondent Durham will provide will provide the respondents with the GPS data from a specific school bus for a specific day. Now, Mr. Kennedy, you're a data person. That's all I'm going to data person. Could you request the raw data that exists so that you yourself could create the document?
Sure. Okay. Well, no. I called up the bus. I said, "Can I have it?" And they said, "No, not without the approval from Dr. Cook."
Okay,
he just has to approve it. That's over.
Okay. So
you're in my life. Come on.
So there's a finding that Durham will provide the response with GPS from a specific school bus for a specific day. Would you take it, Attorney Mung, that if Mr. Kennedy channeled his another request in a more specific format, that Durham could provide the information to the respondents so that he himself can create the document?
Durham's not a public.
No, I know, but no, but the finding is Durham will provide the respondents with a GPS. So what I'm saying is, even though Durham's not a party, I'm saying that would it be possible for Mr. Kennedy, if he tailors a request carefully, that he would get the raw data and he himself could create the document?
Based on the testimony, that would be possible, and and the testimony was that when there's a need for it, that the district does go to Durham and ask for the data for a specific day.
Okay.
whether there could be other issues of whether the data is considered to be maintained by the school district or not could be another issue that was not litigated here. So I don't want to comment on whether they would have to comply with that request, but it would be possible for them to provide him the information.
I understand. What I'm saying is I'm just using your paragraph 8 that says Durham will provide the respondents with GPS data from a specific school bus for a specific day. So if what I'm saying is it sounds to me it kind of kicks open the door for Mr. Kennedy to, if he, I mean, he's not an attorney, he's not, I don't think he's sophisticated in the FOI yet, but if he specifically tailored his request, then I understand, Shipman and Goodwin is, they're very good at the Freedom of Information Act. So that if there's a way that they can request it, they could request it, or the school could request it from Durham, and Durham, being a provider of services, would be able to get it, and so that Mr. Kennedy can actually filter it in and do whatever magic they do with a computer these days.
Based on testimony, that's my understanding, is that if the request had been for the raw data,
okay,
that it could have been provided.
So maybe he has
the school district would have had to request it.
Correct.
Yes, to approve it. The question here is now, in my mind, timing aside, whether how you would do this, it appears the data exists. The data cannot be accessed other than through the school district. School district, it's also pretty clear the school district doesn't have to prepare documents or do. So the question that has not been tested here is whether and why not would the school district request that data.
Correct.
Because without that question being resolved, there is a new answer. The school district doesn't want to do it, and they might have legal reasons beyond what's debated here. No, I think this is posed very clearly, the school district did not volunteer that solution.
That we did not.
I'm trying to ask. I'm hearing that. So for some reason, I'm not judging the reason, but they did not want to take that step, and they may have good reasons. Policy.
I don't think you're legally obligated to.
I agree with what you're asking. How does that get procedurally?
I'm just trying to work something out so that I don't have to sit here a year from now.
We only have jurisdiction over the request.
I understand that. But I'm just looking at paragraph 8, trying to fashion something here. That's all. And then it's, if the parties want to do something later, they can. And it's beyond the scope of this. I understand that.
Counsel, what do you say about that question?
I mean, I think just to reiterate, this is really the issue has to deal with the report and the report that was requested by the complainant. I think, as you said, it's beyond the scope of what the issue was.
Being a good human being, that's what it's all about.
Just a minute, sir. The same question came to my mind as I was looking at it. He's technical. If he had had the GPS data, he might be able to create the report himself. Was it ever offered? Did your client ever say, we'll get you the GPS data?
I think there have been instances where they provided some information to the client.
Please, sir, your comments aren't helpful.
I'm sorry.
The superintendent has provided some information to the complainant, but as related to the report, what was requested, not that, because it doesn't exist. So obviously the district is always willing and wanting to work collaboratively with its families, but
not this one.
As related to the request and the obligations of the district to request this information from Durham, it just simply does not exist. So I'm not quite sure, other than to say that there's no obligation of the district to request this information, therefore. And as a part of that, the district does not have this report, so there's nothing to provide. There's no responsive documents. I think that's all I can say at this point.
No, Ms. Chairman, I do think that we need to control here, that the complaint is constantly interrupting people and speaking out of turn. And after he made a comment to about a staff, I take comments to staff very seriously, and it loses ground in my book. I would not go out of my way to bend down a rabbit hole to give them the information that we're not required to. This, there's no reason that we should have to create a report. And his behavior is, to quote himself, is unprofessional. I would not be willing to change this hearing officer's report, but to give it full approval.
This is Commissioner Hankins.
Commissioner Hankins.
Yeah, I'm not saying do that, you know, in any manner. Attorney Scarlett, you know, is laser focused on trying the case. I have no problem with that, okay? I just look at number eight, finding number eight, and it looks to me there's a different way that is beyond the scope of this case, but, you know, future endeavors, you know, maybe that's something, you know, Mr. Kennedy could explore. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I can only speculate.
And the law, we're not really allowed to speculate. Yeah. But I'm just looking at paragraph eight.
This is Commissioner Goldsby. First to Attorney Munn. So in paragraph eight, when I read that paragraph that Commissioner Hankins was pointing out, it's further found that upon request, Durham will provide the respondents with GPS data. When you say that, though, you're not making a finding and telling them that they will do it. You're just saying that upon a request, it is something that they are able to do.
The testimony from my recollection was that when the district has a need for that information for a specific day, when they make their request to Durham, that Durham does provide that information. So I wasn't making the finding that they're required to, just that that's been the practice based on the testimony.
Understood. Okay. And then to Attorney Scarlett, based on that, you did say that something was provided to Mr. Kennedy. What was provided by the superintendent to Mr. Kennedy, or perhaps I can ask Mr. Kennedy as well.
Oh, thank you. Wait.
There was an email of when I asked, when did he get there today? Because I know it's late. I just want to see what time he says in front of the board and everything. He says, oh, it got there at 8:02. Oh, that's nice. But the stool day starts at 8:05.
So
a handful of times he actually gave the information. And at the very end of this going down this horrible year-long road, when I called up the Durham bus service, because I got nowhere with the board and the superintendent, I said, hey, can I just have the data? And they're like, yeah, but it just has to come from the central office. They need to approve it.
Yeah,
so
no,
it's all there.
That.
It can be done easily. You just stymied one after
another. Let me finish my question, because yep. I do have to take to Commissioner Streeter. You know, there's some level of decorum that needs to be done in this facility, and so I ask that you give respect to everybody here, please. So my question specifically is, what was given to you by the superintendent?
An email.
And what did that email consist of?
Just his words saying, I got here at 8:05. No spreadsheet from anything, just an email.
Okay. So may I make a suggestion? I cannot offer any legal advice, but perhaps your attitude could be a disservice to you in what you're requesting. I empathize with you. I do a lot of work in the educational law space, and I completely understand. It would be very frustrating if my child had to endure testing that day. The bus is constantly late. Taking nothing away from that, sir. However, there's a right and wrong way to do things. And I think if you were to approach things perhaps differently, people may play nice in the sandbox. So if you play nice, maybe other people will play nice with you too.
Well, it was pretty nice at the beginning. And then after a year of it, kind of weighs a toll on you.
That's all I can say. So
that's nice.
Any other comments? So it appears, sir, you might be able to make another request, requesting that they provide you with the GPS data. Fashion that request as Mr. Hankins was talking about. Mm-hmm. So that might get you what you need.
Maybe. I doubt it. They'll hire another lawyer like they have before and fight me against it again. So this is probably going to be over with that.
And then with the decision that I think we're going to adopt, you do have paragraph 8 that supports you're getting that data.
Okay.
So that may satisfy you, and then you may be able to crunch the data and do what you need to
do.
Okay. All right. With that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fisashi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Attorney Munn.
Thank you.
report on pending appeals.
Yes, okay. So under our report on pending appeals, I know Attorney Herman wants to tell you about two new appeals that were filed.
So for the record, Felicia Harmon, counsel to the commission. Two new appeals in Bridgeport cases. Again, one has to do with, these are very old cases that are, many of which have been brought by the Innocence Project, so it's a little concerning. So one of them was an HOR written by Attorney McGee, adopted by the commission, dealt with a 30-year-old homicide case where, again, the Innocence Project is requesting the records in order to look at the conviction, the underlying conviction. The other one was written by Attorney Ahausen, involved a 29-year-old murder case. The recommendation from the hearing officer was adopted by the commission. Both of the cases raised the same kind of argument that the respondents seem to keep raising and raising, that if the complaint doesn't have specific allegations with respects to claims of exemption that haven't been raised yet, they're arguing that the commission can't address those claims of exemption. So, I mean, there are other factual arguments with regard to exemptions. Some of the exemptions were found to be claimed, that were claimed by the respondents, were found to be valid. Some were found not to be, but this one legal argument seems to float through all of these Bridgeport cases about a real misunderstanding about, you know, when someone makes a request for public records, I mean, implicitly, and I think maybe even explicitly in one of these, maybe even both, they want all the records. And if you want to deviate from that rule, you carry that burden of proof before the hearing officer. Bridgeport seems to not understand that basic general rule and what happens when you want to deviate from it. I think that both hearing officers handled the legal arguments made at the hearing very well. And so this makes seven appeals, six of which have the same argument going through them. One is different. So six right now. So we'll see what the court does. Maybe when we start to get some decisions on some of the earlier cases, some of the arguments will be decided by way of the decisions coming down, the earlier cases. But we're just seeing this, you know, kind of a refusal to understand how the law works. I mean, someone makes a request for records. If they don't want all the records, they will tell you. But if they do make a request for records, I think that they want the entire record or the entire file. And when you choose not to disclose part of it, you come here to tell us why you did that. So I think this is an issue that we'll see a decision on soon, hopefully by the Superior Court.
Some procedural questions, primarily for learning. So you said there's seven cases?
So there's seven cases. One of the cases has to do, I don't know if the commission will
erasure,
so it's a little bit different. Right,
cases. Is that
right, they're in the Superior Court.
The Connecticut system. They all go to the same courthouse, necessarily the same judge?
No, they go to the same judge.
So that's what
I'm trying to say.
So there are seven cases before Judge
Budzik. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
One judge.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. So I think as he decides.
He's never deviated it. Always, under the current law, it always has to go to one judge and one district.
Usually it stays with the tax and administrative appeals judge. Now, sometimes he can kind of send them off to other judges. We haven't seen this particular judge do that yet. He's kept all the cases with him. Some of the motions that you'll hear about another case, a motion to dismiss, might get sent off to another judge to hear, but he's kept the real substantive issues before
last
him.
Last 10 seconds.
Yes.
When there are seven cases or six,
yes,
let's say six, it goes to seven, same issues just filed within weeks of each other.
Yeah.
Who can make and whose interest is it to make it some kind of consolidation so that they get resolved?
When we were speaking about this,
we're not getting resolved.
Right,
sounds like it's
right.
In our favor to get it resolved.
I think that, you know, I was going to reach out to counsel for Bridgeport because there's more of us than there are, I think, of attorneys over there. So it might, you know, behoove everyone to kind of put some of on the side. And let this at least, because there are different factual, you know, the factual claims have to be addressed. But I'm thinking maybe if this
core legal argument is decided, some of these cases might, you know, fall away. So perhaps we can work with opposing counsel in this case to set some of these aside and let some of the earlier cases, let the legal issue, the same legal issue get decided. And at least that issue will be cut out of the other cases that follow. So and I don't know, but I would hope the court would be amenable to putting some aside so that we're not proceeding on all six at the same time.
Thank you. I'm not going to understand that.
Was
Attorney Scalo's argument? I can't remember.
Yes.
What is her argument, the consistent argument? Someone would ask for records.
Ask for records.
Failed to identify.
You know, not receive anything or receive a little bit. And then, you know, coming up against that jurisdictional requirement to file a complaint or reissue the request, they file the complaint. They say, I made a request for records. I didn't receive anything, or I received 10 pages. This is a big murder file. We need the commission's help. And so their argument is that because they don't specifically argue that that they wanted everything, or that the claims of exemption haven't been made yet when
right.
they file the
she
complaint. So I don't know what it is that she thinks they could say better. I think that the Innocence Project is getting more tuned in to some of these arguments because they're saying in the request over to Bridgeport, we want the entire file. I mean, they're trying to kind of
channel her.
Yeah, well, they're trying to kind of preempt these arguments that are coming in. But we've really never seen.
But the argument when they come in is that they don't have an exemption.
So the argument, this is the argument I have heard from Attorney Scalo. So they'll come in and they'll make their claims of exemption, and they'll perhaps be willing to give out everything in the file except what they believe is exempt. And I think if I take their thinking to the farthest extent, they believe that the requester would have to come back again and make a new request for the exempt information and start over again, which is.
I think in one of the cases they had asked, well, we're going to go, if you order us to give the records, we're going to determine what's exempt, and we're going to withhold that.
Right.
And then they can argue for it later, and it's like, no, you argue your exemption
right. It's an
now.
Evidentiary hearing before the
right.
hearing officer.
And then,
so
and then we'll make a determination.
Right. And I think that, initially what they're not, cluing into or picking up on is that the general rule in the state is disclosure.
Right.
And if you want to deviate from the general rule, you come here to tell the commission why, and you
right.
do that in an evidentiary hearing, which is reviewed by this commission
right.
in this proceeding.
And then present in-camera records and
right.
say,
right.
we think
right.
the exemption applies, they don't get it, and then.
Right, they feel like they can give out anything they want on the first round, and if
right.
they're serious about it, they need to come back around again and ask for what was exempt and have a second hearing. I mean, taken to its absurdity, I think that's what
right. right.
create a two-step process for.
So who's arguing before the Superior Court? Is it?
We have Attorney Munn has two cases.
On the other side, who's arguing?
Attorney Scalo. For us, we have Attorney Munn, we have Attorney Miller, and we have these two cases haven't been assigned yet. But I think it's all Attorney Scalo. It's all.
She's got a lot of
right. work. She's got a lot of work.
It's hard.
Right. But a lot of it's kind of repetitive, so I don't know,
yeah.
But
okay.
Anything else?
Yes.
Just quick, as a non-attorney, when you give those same repetitive answers before the same judge, doesn't that sort of wear thin a little bit?
I would hope so.
Unless he thinks the answers are right.
Well, that's right. But I think our track record's pretty.
I mean, we've got some pretty good Supreme Court case law
right.
on these
right.
general rules and presumptions. So that's the two new appeals. So six kind of similar flows around.
We're still waiting for an appellate court decision.
We have an appellate court decision that's been argued also by Attorney McGee. And then so that case would make eight, and then six similar and one kind of very different case. So
did
seven.
They appeal?
We appealed, yeah. Okay, and so.
Is there one case still pending before the Supreme Court also?
For yes, Jerome is still pending.
Can you tell us where that is?
So I argued that case in November of last year, and we argued it at Eastern Connecticut State University. Right. And we had five judges sit to hear the case. And just recently, the court added two more justices, I should say, to the panel. So now it's a full panel. So they added very recently Justice McDonald and Justice Danahy to review those arguments and briefs and things. So I'm thinking within a month we should have a decision. I'm thinking maybe. So it was Lothar and Demas Lindrum. Yeah, it was November. So pretty soon, I think.
So they add the newly appointed judges that are added to the panel, although they did not.
They added two more to the panel.
They're not there for the oral hearing.
Right, so five for the oral argument. Now plus two makes a full panel, so it's going to be decided by the whole court. I don't know if...
That's interesting to me. As you're learning, the judges will participate, some who have been in oral hearing, some have not.
Well,
usually
they listen. Yeah, they listen right to the argument. Usually when five judges need two more judges to come in, there's usually some disagreement. Now there's seven. We'll see. Anything else, commissioners?
It was very revealing. Thank you.
I hope not. I hope they all agree, but I have a feeling.
You'd be able to report on your argument. You have the scheduled argument and the summary judgment.
Well, we were supposed to have oral argument yesterday in the David Godbout matter, but the judge on Friday decided it was supposed to be remote. I don't know what happened. It was scheduled for 2:00. But the judge decided to postpone the remote argument and bring everyone in on October 25th at 2:00. So I'll miss the next commission meeting. So he wants an in-person oral argument on that case. Sorry. Yeah, that's okay. It's Mr. Godbout's motion for summary judgment and my cross motion for summary judgment. So maybe he thought there's a lot, maybe bring everyone in. Okay, that's all I have. And so here's a motion that's going to be discussed by Attorney Smith, one that was not heard by the administrative judge, tax and appeals judge, and was sent to another judge. And I'll just note before she reports that she was able to resolve this case without ordering transcripts. So very good.
Saved us.
Good afternoon, Mary Kate Smith again. In this appeal, this is Chief Police Department, City of New Haven, et al. Versus the Freedom of Information Commission. The underlying case was docket number FIC 2022-0176. It was David Collins and the Day versus New London Police Department, et al. Commissioner Hankins was the hearing officer, and Paula Perlman helped him. She was the commission counsel who assisted him. There, the complainants requested copies of video footage from all the body-worn cameras of officers on New Year's Eve in 2021 from the City of New London. The respondents were requiring the complainants to pay over $600 for the requested video footage that had to be redacted. The respondents charged the hourly rate of the employee who reviewed and redacted the video. The respondents, under section 1-212B1, they can only charge hourly rates for formatting and programming. And that's what the respondents argued, that redacting the videos, you know, like blurring a face or what have you, was the same as formatting and redacting. And the commission disagreed and found that the respondents were redacting videos, not reformatting or programming. But the police department appealed the commission's final decision. And when they did, they served the Attorney General's office and not the Freedom of Information Commission at our office. And so I filed a motion to dismiss on July 7th because section 1-206 requires that the Freedom of Information Commission be served, not the Attorney General's office. And that deprived the court of subject matter jurisdiction. And so the appeal had to be dismissed. Oral argument was on September 29th, and Judge Cohn granted the commission's motion to dismiss on the record that day. So, and no transcripts were ordered.
Attorney Smith, Commissioner Hankins, they didn't, what was surprising is they didn't show up for the meeting, our regular meeting. They just let the thing, both parties just let it roll over on them. You know, not that I was necessarily prepared to argue, I mean, to defend myself, but,
yeah.
You know, they just, yeah. You know, they didn't show up, which I thought was kind of odd. It was ripe for argument.
Right, and the attorney who handled the case, his experience with FOI, and he tried to blame the marshal who served. However, all he had to do was review the marshal's return of service before he filed it, and actually could have just mailed it via certified mail to the Freedom of Information Commission instead of even having the marshal go back out. So,
yeah.
Anyway, it was an important decision, and the court hasn't had to review it, so it still stands. Thank you.
Some good legal issues underneath the decision. So, as Kate said, the decision stands, so that's good. The only other thing I just wanted to mention, the other court argument, Jen Miller, right, is that this week? Appellate court argument and the Avon case involving that, what was it, memorandum?
The employee log.
Do you remember that with the a claim of attorney-client privilege? Mm-hmm. Town attorney reviewed the log and then apparently gave it back to the employee and then said, it wasn't a public record, and if it was, it was privileged. So, looking forward to that argument, at least I am. I don't know if Jen is on Thursday. Okay, so that's it on pending appeals under executive director's report. Well, I'll just note for everyone that our newest commissioner is hanging out there in the audience, Judy Ganswin. She wanted to observe what everyone does today, and I think next meeting, the 25th, we will swear Judy in. So,
if you make it back.
Yeah, if you come back. So we have to make room for her at the table. We're going to do a wraparound. And then just mention again about our conference coming up, which you all know, on the 20th. And it's great that a number of you have already told us that you're going to come, and our attendance is really picking up in this last week beforehand. We're anticipating maybe around 200, and then adding us into it, it should be quite a nice group. So look forward to that and working hard to get it ready to go. I don't think I have anything else under staff reports. We're still on the search for our new employees. Nothing yet on legislative report and no new business.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move we adjourn.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Kuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
It's always something.